Now is not the time for sarcasm, Jane.
I'm not being sarcastic.
Then I have no idea how to respond.
You kiss me and tell me everything is going to be okay.
He kissed me. Everything's going to be okay.
Okay.
I think I just threw up in my mouth a little bit, Zeb griped.
Stretch, you have any idea who might have been behind the wheel of that car?
Dick asked.
You said it swerved toward you after it struck Jamie. Do you think it's possible that you were the target and Jamie was just collateral damage?
Yes, I said. That's actually been buzzing at the back of my brain since Jamie took his last breath. And after the last couple of years, I actually have a system for narrowing down a list of suspects when something like this happens. But honestly, I don't think I have any enemies left at this point. I mean, I haven't done anything to anyone lately, and I don't think I have anything that anyone else would want. That's generally what gets me in trouble. First, there was Missy, the insane real estate agent who wanted to take my house and turn it into a tacky vampire condo development. Then Esther Barnes, the psychic who tried to scramble Zeb's brain and prevent his wedding to Jolene. And, of course, Janine. But those were all cases of my actually doing something to piss someone off.
What about the ladies in the Chamber of Commerce?
Zeb asked. Well, yeah, they're plotting against me, but Nice Courtney says their plans are of the make Jane a social pariah who dies pitiful, penniless, and alone variety. I think it involves getting all of my advertising changed to say specialty hookers.
Local vampire haters?
Nah, I can't see one of them having a beef with me specifically. If anyone, they'd go after... I pressed my lips together and gave Dick a speculative look.
What?
He demanded.
Oh, nothing.
Former employers?
Mrs. Stubblefield is drying out in a rehab center in Bowling Green.
Gabriel's other errant vampire children?
He promises me there are no others, I muttered, narrowing my eyes at him. Gabriel elbowed Dick in the gut.
Jackass.
Dick chortled and ducked a second blow from his childhood best friend.
Have you noticed how many people don't like you? Jolene asked.
Your Grandma Ruthie, my aunties, Mrs. Stubblefield, old lady psychics.
Ooh,
Zeb exclaimed.
What about all those girls you insulted slash made cry in high school? We just saw them at the reunion. That probably stirred up some feelings.
I don't think you're helping there, Zeb, Dick said, patting Zeb's shoulder. And I didn't make those girls cry. In general, I was responding to bitchery in kind. I was provoked.
Every time? Andrea asked.
There weren't that many times, I insisted. Andrea looked to Zeb, who was nodding.
Yes, there were, he said.
What about assassins paid by your Grandma Ruthie?
Jolene suggested. That is surprisingly plausible, I grumbled. Look, over the years, my unique sense of humor and perverse grasp of honesty may have led to some hurt feelings and long-held grudges. But overall, I'm a pretty likable person. They all seemed to bite their lips simultaneously to keep from snickering.
I hate you all, I exclaimed.
I'm glad y'all are taking this so seriously,
Jolene said in her best motherly tone. No one had the decency to look sheepish.
Okay, so the suspect list is long and somewhat vague, Andrea said. The question is, how do we keep Jane, and by extension her loved ones and colleagues, from getting shot, stabbed, poisoned, beaten, tasered, burned, maced, or otherwise slapped about by anonymous yet incredibly determined forces?
We don't let her work alone at the shop, Gabriel suggested. We put her in a hermetically sealed plastic vampire habitat, Dick said.
We hire one of my nicer cousins to come over during the day and keep an eye on the place,
Jolene added.
We keep her from handling guns, knives, poison, taser guns, fire, or mace so she doesn't injure herself, Zeb said.
These are all good suggestions, I said, except for putting me in a vampire hamster cage. But Gabriel's right. I'm tired of waiting around for trouble to come to me. I'm tired of dreading a ringing phone because it could mean that one of you has been hurt. I'm tired of keeping my head in the sand. So I'm going to take a more proactive approach.
We,
they chorused. Instead of sitting around waiting for the next incident, they corrected me again in choral, which was a little creepy. We are going to try to find the person driving that car. The plate was obscured, but I got a partial number. Jolene, do you have any cousins who work in the DMV?
I'm insulted that you even have to ask,
she snorted, bobbing the baby on her hip.
I have three.
I scribbled out a description of the car's make and model and the partial license plate and handed it to Jolene.
Can we get a whiteboard, like on Law and Order?
Andrea asked. Dick nodded.
I was thinking official Keep Jane from Being Murdered Task Force t-shirts.
The team seemed ready to break to take on their individual tasks when Gabriel raised his hands. I gritted my teeth and waited for the inevitable speech that could be summed up as,
I think we should keep Jane locked away and ignorant for her own protection.
Instead, Gabriel said,
I would like to lodge a formal objection to the go-looking-for-trouble plan. I think it's ill-advised and very likely to get at least one of us hurt. But I'm also smart enough to recognize that it's an empty gesture, and since you're going to do it anyway, I might as well get on board.
I cooed. Aw, you know me so well. I pressed a kiss against his tensed, frowning lips. You know, you'd think I would be used to someone trying to kill me by now, but it still hurts my feelings every time. Chapter 3
Newly risen vampires are unpredictable. Handy items to have nearby. Bottled blood, silver chains, and a Snuggie.
Siring for the Stupid, a beginner's guide to raising newborn vampires. On the third day, I insisted that Jolene, Zeb, and the kids stay away. In fact, I asked them to leave their home at the edge of my property and visit Jolene's pack for the night. Not all vampires wake up, well, sane, and I didn't want Zeb's family to become collateral damage to Jamie's newborn thirst. Dick, Gabriel, and I sat in the kitchen, staring up at the ceiling as if we could peer up into the room where Jamie was resting. Sometime around midnight, there was a buzz along my spine. It was as if I could hear Jamie's body picking up its pace, the ripple of energy that would animate him, since blood and electrical impulses had waved bye-bye about 3 days ago.
You feel that too?
I asked Gabriel, who was staring up at the ceiling with trepidation. He shook his head. I frowned. Is this a sire thing? I asked. Could you feel me when I rose?
It's a one-time privilege, Gabriel told me. It ensures that you're present when your child rises. In some cases of particularly troublesome charges, such a tracking device would be handy in the long term.
I'm going to pretend that you're not talking about me, I retorted. Dick put a hand on my shoulder.
Stretch. Go slow, okay? Be careful. Newborns are tricky, and he's a newborn teenager. It's like a hormone double whammy. Imagine what Ophelia must have been like when she first rose.
Gabriel cleared his throat in that shut-the-hell-up manner he'd mastered so many years ago. The look on my face had Dick scrambling to reassure me.
I'm sure it will be fine. Nothing to worry about. Go on up.
Rolling my eyes, I quietly took the stairs two at a time, with my boys close behind. Jamie's body was still and cold on the bed, but you could feel the undercurrent rippling along his skin. I sat on the bed carefully and began unbuttoning my blouse so he could pull the collar aside.
What are you doing?
Gabriel demanded, while Dick seemed torn between laughing and desperately searching for meaning in the crown molding. He's going to want to feed, I said. I don't want him making a buffet out of the townsfolk.
And why does that involve taking off your shirt?
I'm not taking off my shirt. I'm making it easier to access my neck, I said. Gabriel frowned. What? The first feeding I had was with you. I thought this was how it works.
But he can have bottled blood, Gabriel protested.
I thought you said the first feeding was a sacrament.
That was before it was coming from you.
Seriously? I exclaimed. Is this like the vampire version of the breastfeeding debate?
What if he fed from your arm instead? Gabriel said. It's a little less personal.
Gabriel, I'm trying really hard to understand your point of view here, but you're a few syllables from pissing me off. Gabriel raised his hands in a defeated gesture.
Fine. I'm just going to stay back here. Watching. intently.
I shushed him and felt Jamie stir next to me. His eyelids snapped open, and he jerked as if coming out of a bad dream. He blinked a few times, his eyes adjusting to the sharp, startling clarity of vampire vision. He slowly sat up, stretching his reformed muscles. The undead are, generally, more attractive than before we've turned. Even vampires who weren't conventionally attractive in life have a certain sensual sparkle after death. As long as they keep up with basic hygiene, they will stay that way. Jamie, who was already blessed in the looks department, now had a distinctly unfair advantage. The eyes were more jade than olive now, standing out starkly from his creamy skin. His full lips parted over unnaturally white teeth. The boyish charm was still there, but layered over something more dangerous, more compelling. Suddenly, I felt Gabriel's eyes on me, and if I could have blushed, my cheeks would have been beet red. I cleared my throat and kept my voice low, smooth.
Jamie, how do you feel?
Like I got hit by a car,
he muttered. He jerked again, realizing that the feminine voice from his bedside was not, in fact, his mother. Jamie grabbed the sheet and pulled it to his chest.
Miss Jane?
Jamie. He scanned the room quickly, saw Gabriel, and scrambled across the bed. He almost toppled off onto the floor, but his reflexes helped him stop just before his weight shifted over the edge. He did a sort of tuck-and-roll thing that landed him on his feet. His eyes took on a sort of panicked glaze, and he started gasping for breath. I could see the comprehension cross his features. He didn't need to breathe. Jamie, I'm going to need you to stay calm.
Calm? What's happening to me?
What's the last thing you remember? He chewed on his plump bottom lip.
I was working. I drove the truck up to your shop. You waved hello and smiled at me. I remember thinking how much I liked that sweater on you because it made your,
Gabriel cleared his throat. Dick threw Jamie a warning look, and Jamie immediately recognized his sub-basement position on the room's totem pole.
Eyes stand out. You screamed my name, and I turned around, saw the car headed for me. And that's it.
The car ran you down. It was a hit and run. You were bleeding, and there was a lot of internal damage. You were dying, and you asked me to change you. Jamie rubbed at his Adam's apple and swallowed, a sign of the thirst building in his throat.
I don't remember. I remember a feeling of not wanting to die, but that's pretty much it. So, I'm a vampire now?
Yes.
Cool.
My brow furrowed. Really? That's it? That's the sum total of your response?
Yeah.
He shrugged. We're talking a total change in lifestyle here. New hours, new diet, new rules, new lifestyle. And your response is cool?
Do I get a long black coat like that angel guy? Ooh, or Spike. My sister loves that show.
All that MTV and Twitter facing has seriously dulled you kids to emotional response, you know. A note of genuine fear, of concern, crept into his voice.
Wait. Do my parents know I'm a vampire?
I nodded. Someone from the council, the governing body for vampires, went to your house the night you died.
What do you mean, the night I died? How long have I been out?
It takes 3 days for a vampire to rise.
I've missed 3 days of school?
He yelped.
Unexcused? I'm gonna be kicked off the baseball team. Oh, man. My dad's gonna kill me.
I'm pretty sure calling in dead counts as an excused absence.
Were they pissed?
He asked.
Am I grounded?
No. They were upset that you were hurt, but they weren't angry at you.
Can I see them?
Not for a few days. We need to make sure that you're, safe to be around humans. It's sort of dangerous for you to be around people right now. And I know you would hate to hurt someone. You're going to need to get used to feeding and the whole bloodlust thing before we can let you around innocent bystanders.
Aw, man. Why'd you have to bring up food? I'm starving.
He groaned, rubbing his washboard abs.
Well, not starving, really, but thirsty. Really thirsty. Like I've been stuck out in the desert for days. Is that normal?
He asked, voice garbled as his fangs stretched out and bumped his lip.
What's that?
He slapped his hand over his mouth.
What the hell is that?
Those are your fangs, I told him. It's a perfectly normal response to your hunger.
Oh, my God. This is so embarrassing. I feel like I should walk around with a big notebook over my face.
I laughed, but Gabriel asked,
why is that funny?
How do I make them go away, Miss Jane?
Well, right now you need them. But we'll work on the whole retracting issue. We're just going to stay nice and calm, and I'm going to walk you through your first feeding, okay?
Is it going to be gross?
It takes some getting used to, I told him, but it's no big deal. Were you embarrassed when I used to serve you smiley face pancakes?
I'm embarrassed that you're talking about it now,
Jamie said, shooting a pointed look at Dick and Gabriel. Well, this is just like that. It's just breakfast. Now I'm going to put my wrist up to your lips and you just do what feels natural, okay?
Is it going to hurt you?
He asked, eyeing my arm fearfully. Not if you don't want to hurt me, I assured him. Now just put your fangs into the skin and bite down.
I can't. It feels... I don't want to.
Maybe we should just try the bottled blood,
Gabriel offered. I shot a glare at him. Are you going to helicopter grandsire him, or do we want a fully functional vampire who won't be living in our basement 30 years from now?
What?
Here, Jamie. I'm going to help you this once, but the next time you have to do it on your own. I bit through the thin skin over my veins, shuddering at the weird wet crunching sound it made, and offered it to Jamie. He tentatively ran his tongue along the wound and lapped at the cool rise of blood welling up from my skin. I could hear Gabriel growling behind me. Jamie latched onto the bite and pulled blood from the wound in earnest. His hands wrapped around my arm and he leaned into me, nestling his back into my side. He relaxed, nuzzling the skin of my arm in a way that was distinctly not platonic. Chewing my lip, I looked up to Gabriel and Dick. My fiancé seemed to be debating whether to let me handle the situation or throw Jamie out a window, while Dick was struggling against hysterical giggles at my plight. Jamie, that's enough now, I said, using what I hoped was a good impersonation of my mother's Jane, be reasonable tone. Jamie grumbled and tugged my arm possessively. He shifted his hips toward me and my eyes widened. Jamie had a little problem. Well, not a little problem. It was a perfectly average, notebook-worthy problem. He opened his eyes and followed my eyeline to the tent in his sweatpants. He immediately pulled away and grabbed a pillow to cover himself. I was woefully unprepared for living with a teenage boy.
Sorry, he said, grimacing.
It happens,
Gabriel acknowledged, moving ever so subtly closer to the bed to help me rise from it.
Just don't let it happen around Jane. It's not appropriate.
Who are you again?
Jamie demanded of Gabriel. Did you want to try some of the bottled now? I asked, pretending the embarrassment away by sheer force of will. You need to get used to feeding both ways. If you want to feed on humans, that's your choice, but as long as you're living with me, I'm going to ask you to stick to a non-violent diet. Jamie accepted the offered faux type O, took a sip, and blanched.
I'm good. Wait, I'm living with you?
Yes. I turned you, so I'm responsible for you. Like a foster parent. If you screw up and eat a busload of nuns, I'm in some serious trouble. So if I ever come down on you or seem like I'm being unreasonable, it's just because you don't quite get the rules yet. And I'm trying to keep us both from getting the trial, the vampire version of ironic/painful capital punishment. Jamie's eyes scanned the room, checking out his new digs. Considering that it was my room when I stayed with Jetty as a kid and still sported peppermint-striped wallpaper and a lacy canopy bed, I didn't think he was terribly impressed.
How long will I be here?
Until you're ready to live on your own.
But what about school?
He demanded, his voice cracking Peter Brady style.
And work. Baseball. College.
I honestly don't know. Maybe when you're ready, we could have Ophelia arrange some homeschool lessons so you could still graduate with your class, assuming that they're willing to have a nighttime ceremony. And as for college, maybe in a few years, you could try it. Since the coming out, more schools have been adding night classes to their schedules. I know you were probably counting on baseball scholarships, but I can help you out with tuition. I feel sort of responsible for this. I'm so sorry, Jamie. I know this is a lot to take in. Trust me, I've been there. The thing you have to focus on is that you're alive, technically speaking, and that once you stop thinking about everything you've given up, being a vampire is pretty awesome.
Like what?
He demanded. Well, you're super strong, for one, like athletes on illegal substances times 1,000. And that thing you did to keep yourself from falling on your face doesn't compare to what you'll be able to do balance and agility-wise. You can run faster than you ever imagined. And some vampires get extra bonus talents.
Like singing?
Dick snickered and muttered something about karaoke, which was clearly a reference to the last time we'd gone to the cellar as a group and I'd performed a particularly sad rendition of Love is a Battlefield. Gabriel tried to cover his laugh by clearing his throat, but failed. I scowled at them both. No. Like, Gabriel can alter human memories. It's a handy skill when you're feeding off your neighbors and need them to remember falling neck first on a barbecue fork.
Wow, he marveled. What can you do?
I can read minds. Jamie looked stricken, which made me wonder what he'd been thinking in the last few minutes. Only human minds, I told him. But I try not to go sifting around in other people's brains. It's just rude. I still can't get the hang of reading vampires unless I'm feeding from them, and that's generally when Gabriel and I are... Never mind.
I want to see,
Jamie said. I frowned. Gabriel and I are not doing that in front of you.
No. I want to see how fast and strong I am. Can you take me outside? I want to run or something. Please? I feel like I've been sleeping for days.
I looked up and saw Gabriel shaking his head.
I'm not sure that's a great idea, Stretch,
Dick added, casting nervous glances at our young ward. Jamie gave me the big green puppy dog eyes, and I felt a strange melty sensation in my chest. I groaned. This was not a healthy precedent to set, him persuading me by being adorably pathetic.
Please, he begged. I have some questions for you, and they're kind of, private.
What kind of questions?
Gabriel asked.
The private kind,
Jamie shot back. Unsure, I gave Gabriel the classic eyebrow lift, meaning, for the love of God, please tell me what to do. Gabriel shrugged.
It's up to you. You're the sire now.
That is decidedly unhelpful, I told him.
Douche!
Jamie fake coughed into his hand. I turned on my young charge and gave him a withering glare. Seriously? Did you just douche cough my fiancé? What next, the dreaded slut sneeze? Dick laughed under his breath. I whirled on Dick.
I so should have let you turn him.
I turned toward Jamie and poked a finger into his chest. Okay, but the first sign of you bolting for that busload of nuns, I break your ankles like Kathy Bates in Misery. He gave me a blank look. I sighed and tried to think of a more modern cinematic torture reference. I'll go Jigsaw on your ass. He laughed. I am completely serious. You will do what I say when I say it, or you won't be able to walk for a week. He looked frightened for a moment, then nodded.
Believe it or not, my mom used to say that right before she'd take me and Daisy into Walmart.
Nice. I snickered as I tossed him a T-shirt extolling the virtues of the Southern Festival of Books. Take it easy. It's your first time out. We trotted down the stairs with Gabriel and Dick close at our heels. I stopped on the front porch, sniffing the air, trying to sense any humans who might stumble into our path. Jamie was staring up at the sky, shielding his sensitive eyes from the light of the moon. He flexed his hands, marveling at the way the sinew and bone moved under his skin. He smiled, looking to me like a baby taking his first steps. You ready? I asked. Jamie was stretching his arms behind his shoulders in that jockey way that clearly communicated that he did not consider me athletic competition.
What happened your first time out?
I tried to eat my best friend. His arms froze over his head and he frowned.
Oh, well, I'll try not to do that then.
I laughed and took a few quick steps toward the pasture. Jamie quickly caught up to me. My new child running was a thing to behold. How someone so bulky could be so lithe and light on his feet was a mystery. We ran across the width of my land, leaping high over the grassy hills for no other reason than that we could. Jamie whooped as he landed, a little unsteady on his feet, and then bounded over an old shed my great-grandfather used to use as a deer blind.
"This is great," he crowed,
flipping back into a handspring and walking on his hands on the tall, silvered grass. I sat down on a fallen log and watched, a bemused smirk tilting the corners of my mouth.
"I can see everything. Every crater on the moon, every branch on every tree. I can smell everything. The grass crushing under my feet, the smell of your skin. Did anyone ever tell you that you smell just like peaches and cinnamon?"
"Easy," I told him sternly.
"No, it's just that the smell sort of sticks out in my mind, probably because it was the last thing I smelled as I was dying. That smell means safe, it means home, which is probably some weird vampire instinct thing, huh?"
He continued, as if I hadn't just admonished him for inappropriate sire harassment.
"How come we never hear about this stuff when they talk about vampires on the news? It's all, be respectful and cautious when you're approaching the cranky undead. No one ever says, vampires are like superheroes. Ask one of them to leap over a tall building in a single bound."
"Because vampires would get extremely annoyed if humans did that," I mused.
"Whatever. If I get to go back to school, I'm going to convince the coach to let me keep playing baseball. We could totally win state with my new skills,"
he said, springing back to his feet and executing several backflips.
"We'd have to play at night, though."
"Well, they might let you on the cheerleading squad either way," I laughed as he tumbled across the moonlit clearing.
"Hey,
I'm just kidding. If they let you back in school, I will go to every game and wear one of those big, embarrassing pins with your picture on it." His face split with a huge, toothy grin.
"Really?
Really. Someone has to keep you from snacking on the outfield. The Half Moon Howlers couldn't stand the loss if you were staked by angry spectators."
"Funny."
He frowned, finally coming to a stop so he could sit beside me.
"So you said something about rules earlier? You should probably tell me about those now. Nothing that's this awesome can come without some serious drawbacks. Like steroids or dating a hot chick with a crazy dad."
"How much do you know about us?" I asked. "Like our origin stories, the reason we came out of the coffin, that sort of thing."
"Well, I was in elementary school during the Great Coming Out, and my parents wouldn't let me watch the news because they were afraid it would give me nightmares."
"Thank you for reminding me again of how young you are," I sighed. "Okay, no one knows where vampires come from. Almost every culture has some sort of vampire creature in its folklore. I could bore you to tears describing how the most popular beliefs originated from the Slavic traditions, probably spread by gypsies as they traveled through India and Egypt, but it's your first night, and I'll spare you. There are plenty of books in the library that you should study anyway." Jamie blanched at the mention of assigned reading, but maintained a respectful silence. I continued. "Vampires had it pretty good for about 2,000 years. Lurking in the shadows, drinking their fill, looking all pretty and ageless. And then, this doofus tax consultant, Arnie Frink, gets turned and sues his boss for nighttime work hours, citing the Americans with Disabilities Act. After the courts determined that Arnie was not, in fact, crazy, or breathing, for that matter, Arnie got his night hours, a handsome settlement, and an interview with Barbara Walters. Vampires were out, whether they wanted it or not. You probably remember everybody running around panicking, buying vampire home defense kits at Walmart, and making crosses out of tent stakes. Vampires were panicking, too, forming the World Council for the Equal Treatment of the Undead, making tentative agreements with the governments of the world, trying to keep the angry mobs at bay. But I realize that you'll find all of this equally boring coming from me, so I'm just going to refer you to the Guide for the Newly Undead. It's basically a survival guide for newly turned vampires. You need to memorize it. Maybe carry portions of it around in your pocket." Jamie groaned at the thought of homework, so I moved on to more interesting topics. "The rules are pretty simple. The most important thing you have to remember is sunlight is bad. It will kill you. No arguments, no bargaining. You will be a little pile of dust. I tried using SPF 500 sunblock once, but ended up with severe burns on my hands because I forgot to protect the creases between my fingers. The pain I can't even describe. I would avoid it altogether to the best of your ability.
Okay. But what about stakes and crosses and silver bullets and all that? 'Cause I'm thinking a silver bullet gun would be pretty awesome for self-defense. It would go with the black coat.
I sighed and made a promise to myself to keep Dick and Jamie separated as much as possible. We're allergic to silver. Imagine sticking your hand into a hornet's nest and being forced to listen to the Wiggles while the little bastards repeatedly sting you. He shuddered. Yeah, it hurts. And if you get dosed with too much of it, your healing abilities are overwhelmed, and you can have the vampire version of anaphylactic shock.
Huh?
I sighed, reminding myself that I was dealing with a young person. Anybody at your school allergic to peanuts? He nodded.
Tiffany Scott's face swells up and turns purple if she gets near a PB&J. She has to sit at a special table in the cafeteria.
Same principle.
That's kind of cool.
I harumphed. Let's see. Wooden stake to the heart, beheading, and setting us on fire. All fatal. We can see our reflections. Crosses aren't a big deal unless you and God have some unresolved issues. We can go into homes uninvited, but we would be criminally charged if we do, so let's not try that.
Can we turn into bats?
Sadly, no.
Garlic?
He asked. Stinky, but not harmful.
What about sex?
I tried to maintain the most neutral expression possible. What about it?
Will I be having it?
That's sort of up to you. Jamie moved toward me and put his hand on my thigh. I shot to my feet and backed away to a distance that wouldn't get me put on some sort of watch list. No, 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 that's not how this works at all.
But you said Gabriel was your sire and you're with him.
I'm with him because he's my boyfriend. Well, my fiancé, now.
Seriously?
I mulled over whether he was more surprised that I was getting married or that I was marrying Gabriel. I nodded. He just happened to become my boyfriend after I was turned. It has nothing to do with the sire thing.
But what if I want to date?
I shrugged. After you're settled, you can date whoever you want, as long as they're a consenting adult and you don't do anything anatomically compromising in my house. Given the gleam in his eyes, I was suddenly very thankful that Jamie couldn't get anyone pregnant. There wasn't enough latex at Goodyear to contain that gleam. You have to be careful around humans, Jamie, I said, my tone gentle. Daddies who wouldn't be happy to find you rolling around the back seat with their daughters aren't going to be happier about it now that you have fangs. And while getting hit with a shotgun blast won't kill you, it will sting like the dickens. And you don't want to hurt the girls either. You're a good-looking guy. You could break a lot of hearts. He grinned at me and put his hand on my knee. I groaned.
I misread that again, huh?
Yes. And your hand's still on my knee. I sighed. That settles it. We're going to have to keep you away from Dick Cheney.
The vice president?
Oh, we need to talk. Chapter 4. There will be outside events that can distract you from your duties as a sire. Only leave your child with other vampires whom you trust. Do not, under any circumstances, leave your child alone with a human, unless you enjoy settling wrongful death suits with large amounts of your money. Siring for the Stupid, A Beginner's Guide to Raising Newborn Vampires. Jamie proved to be as energetic and fretful as any newborn baby on his first day home from the hospital. None of us got any rest until the very last dregs of night sky had been burned away by the sun and he collapsed in the guest room. After precious few hours of fitful sleep, I was having a very strange dream. First, a burly man with wild, curly dark hair was standing in front of River Oaks, screaming and shaking his fists. I reached out to his mind, but all I got were rolling waves of hate, grief, anger, and regret in alternating shades of red and orange. I pulled away, recoiling from the angry mass of thoughts. My weird dream brain shifted to inside the house, and my grandmother was standing in the corner of the room, and she was angry, hissing horrible things to me. I was a disappointment to my family. I was a thief. I was a usurper. Her voice was a cold fog that slithered across the floor, over my bed, wrapping itself around my head as the insults struck closer to home. I was unnatural and wrong. It should have been me who died. I was a whore, sullying my family's home with my vile, dead lover. Sadly, it was pretty much the same speech I got last Christmas. The very moment the sun slid behind the horizon, the phone rang. Gabriel groaned and rolled away from it. Still groggy, I reached for the receiver and clicked the remote for the sunproof curtains to rise. Lovely, purplish twilight poured in through the windows as my eyes adjusted. Blinking blearily, I picked up the receiver and heard a ragged sniffle from the other end of the line.
Jane, sweetie, I have bad news.
Slightly more awake, I pushed the receiver closer to my ear. Mom? What's going on?
Jane, your Grandma Ruthie passed.
I sat up, taking the quilt with me and knocking Gabriel out of bed. What? Oh, Gabriel muttered into the floor.
Your grandma died this afternoon. I'm so sorry, honey.
No, no. I'm sorry, Mom. Are you okay? What happened? My mind immediately went to Grandma's boyfriend, Wilbur, whom I'd never trusted. Grandma Ruthie's four husbands and her previous fiancé had all died under suspicious circumstances, involving a speedy delivery truck, a brown recluse bite on the inside of the throat, a previously unknown allergy to Grandma Ruthie's famous strawberry rhubarb pie, a golf-related lightning strike, and a miscalculation of a Viagra dose. So, when she paired up with a ghoul, a sad version of vampirism so weak that they barely qualified as immortal, with a similar marital history, I'd stated, loudly enough for the entire family to hear me, that it was only a matter of time before one of them ended up dead. Although Wilbur was basically the Splenda of vampires, a weak, ineffectual imitation of the real thing, my money was on Grandma Ruthie. I'd placed a small wager with Dick, relating to the possibility of her being dosed with botulism. Wilbur and Grandma Ruthie seemed very happy together, although I guess that when you never know when your lover might facilitate your release from your mortal coil, it adds a certain amount of adrenalinated spice to the mix. Shudder.
Your grandmother had a stroke at the garden club meeting. She was screaming at Biddy Tate about having the gall to put marigolds in the sponsored planters in front of City Hall without permission, and she just keeled over.
That didn't sound natural to me, but I didn't think it would help to point that out. It struck me that for once, my mother had a legitimate reason to be overwrought, to make demands and have hysterical hissy fits. But she seemed so calm. Her voice hadn't cracked once in our conversation. She hadn't commanded me to construct a salad from bacon, cream cheese, and gelatin and get myself to her house to receive well-wishers. She wasn't even asking what I planned to wear to the visitation. I was more than a little worried.
How are you doing? I asked.
I'm fine, honey. I've been preparing for this for a while.
That's weird.
You know me, Jane. I've got to handle all the details now. Focus on that. I'll fall apart later. Don't you worry.
I nodded. When Mama finally wound down, Daddy would be there for her to pick up the pieces. He was better at that than people gave him credit for. But I would be standing by with industrial-grade sedatives, just in case.
Now, your grandma had her service pre-planned.
Of course she did, I said, rolling my eyes and imagining the eulogy Grandma had most likely typed, highlighted, and delivered to Reverend Neal.
But there's no rule that says we have to have the funeral services during the day. We could push it back until after sunset,
Mama offered. I smiled. Ruthie would roll over in her casket if she knew you were doing that.
Jane!
Right. Sorry. Too soon. I'll be fine, Mama, honestly. I sort of said my goodbyes when she, you know, declared that I was a soulless monster and no longer her grandchild. And really, most of the town knows about my condition now. They won't question why I'm not there. and really, I don't think Grandma Ruthie would want me there with her friends anyway.
Well, at least come to the visitation.
I was ashamed at the sheer length of the pause.
Janie, I need you there, please.
Her voice rose a couple of octaves, and my resolve crumbled. All right, Mama. For you, I'll be there. We discussed logistics and food. Turns out I was expected to prepare a macaroni salad, a cheese platter, and corn relish, despite the fact that I couldn't eat any of it. And we both knew that Grandma Ruthie's church lady friends were going to bombard Mama with enough casseroles to sink an armada. But it was the gesture that counted. If I showed up to the service empty-handed, it would be seen as thumbing my nose at Grandma one last time. And even if I was inclined to use an entirely different finger, I wouldn't subject Mama to whispers from the church ladies about how heartless her child was. For once in my life, I was going to get through a situation with a little dignity. Okay, I probably wasn't, but I would fake it as if my life depended on it. I hung up the phone, and for the first time in my life, human or undead, my first instinct was to pick the receiver right back up and call my sister. Weird. Gabriel climbed back into bed, burying his face in a pillow. Shell-shocked, I leaned against the headboard. My grandma died. Gabriel raised his head, his brow crinkled.
But I thought you said meanness was a preservative.
Clearly, I was wrong. I sighed as he twined his fingers through mine. I'm okay, really. I'm a little sad that she died with things so bitter between the two of us, but I'm also smart enough to recognize that was never going to change unless I magically transformed myself into the person she wanted me to be. I didn't owe her that just because she happened to be related to me, but I do owe it to my mother and my sister to help them through whatever mourning process they're going to go through. Gabriel put his arm around my shoulder and tucked my head under his chin.
What do you need from me?
I need you to be well-rested, so when this all comes crashing down on my head, I have a safety net, I said, nuzzling his neck.
Excellent. I can do that,
he said, closing his eyes and seeming to doze off in a sitting position. I listened for sounds of movement in the house, but heard nothing. Apparently, the phone didn't wake Jamie. Carefully unraveling myself from Gabriel's grasp, I went downstairs and found that my child had not risen for the evening, which wasn't surprising. But the trail of empty synthetic blood bottles scattered from the kitchen to the stairs told me that at some point during the day, he'd managed to get out of bed and drink the last of our faux type O supply. I never heard of a newborn doing such a thing. I'd practically been comatose during my first few days as a vampire. But I suppose all bets were off when you were dealing with any food source and a teenage boy.
It would be wrong to kill my child,
I muttered, sorting through the debris to try to find some semblance of food. I settled on a half-empty bottle of sangre left over from a party a few weeks before, hidden at the back of the fridge.
It would be wrong to kill my child.
My teenicidal thoughts were interrupted by a knock on my door. I still had the bottle to my lips and was mid-swig when Jenny burst through the door and wailed,
Jane!
I nearly choked on the fancy dessert blood, reminding myself once again that giving Jenny a spare key to the house had been a gesture of good faith. Taking it back now would be a leap in the wrong direction. Jen?
I'd never seen my prim, polished sister look so disheveled, and that includes the time we got into a mud wrestling match at last year's Chamber of Commerce Fall Festival.
Her dark blonde hair was scraped up into a limp little ponytail. Her eyes were red-rimmed and swollen. And she was wearing a raspberry-colored tracksuit. I wasn't even aware that Jenny owned a tracksuit. Jenny sniffled and threw her arms around me. Gabriel came downstairs and saw Jenny sobbing quietly into my neck. He lifted his eyebrows in amazement. I shrugged. When he moved back toward the steps, I mouthed,
"Coward,"
silently to him. "Jenny, calm down," I said awkwardly, patting her back. "Let me make you some coffee."
"Okay,"
she whimpered soggily as she dropped into one of the kitchen chairs.
"I just couldn't go by Mama's house and worry her, so my first thought was that I should go to you."
"Really?"
"I know. I was a little surprised, too,"
she admitted as I set up the coffee maker.
I mean, I know she wasn't perfect. I know the two of you never really got along, but it's still hard, you know? I hate that we were so close for most of my life, but at the end, we were barely speaking.
A little pang of guilt twinged in my chest. Grandma Ruthie had been such a divisive force for the two of us. I was Daddy's clear favorite. We operated on the same wavelength. As much as I thought Jenny was Mama's favorite, our mother's loyalties had always been divided. While she asked me why I couldn't be more like Jenny, she was constantly fussing to Jenny about how worried she was about me. Jenny was just looking to be someone's favorite. Grandma was more than willing to provide her the kind of attention she wanted if Jenny was willing to jump. As Jenny and I started to mend our fences over the past few months, she and Grandma Ruthie spent less and less time together. Grandma couldn't understand why Jenny was wasting her time with me, and Jenny lost patience with Grandma's continued criticisms and complaints about me. It felt terrible to be the wedge that drove the two of them apart, but I had to admit that Jenny was more relaxed, more human, without our grandmother's influence. I was glad that Zeb and Jolene spent so much time at the house and occasionally required sustenance. Otherwise, I would only have the creamer and sugar left over from my human days to offer Jenny. I poured her a cup of coffee and sat down across the table. Jenny smiled as a thank you and sipped.
Mama said for the visitation we should come up with our favorite memory of Grandma. In her notes to the pastor, Grandma said she wanted us to show what a kind, loving woman she was. I thought I'd talk about all the times she took me on special little shopping trips or when she'd take me to the teeny tees to show off the dresses she made me. What about you?
A nice, sweet story about Grandma Ruthie. The happiest memory I had of her was when she and my ghostly Aunt Jetty had a screaming match through a dry erase board. The memories of her dragging me kicking and screaming to the teeny tees would hardly qualify as memorial material. Nor would her disappointment with my low placement in the one Little Miss Half Moon Hollow pageant she'd managed to force me into. Or the time she refused to speak to me for an entire summer because I wouldn't date some mouth-breathing cretin grandson of one of her bridge club friends. Best summer of my life. Jane? I'm thinking, I muttered. The tantrums, the scoldings, the faked medical emergencies, the many, many reminders that I was not what she expected in a grandchild. I can't say they made for warm, fuzzy grandma memories. There has to be something, Jane. I mean, you weren't always at each other's throat. You know, in some cultures, the bereaved hire mourners to make sure it looks like the deceased is beloved and missed. Maybe I could hire someone to do my special memory, I suggested. Jenny frowned at me. Look, Jen, I didn't measure up for Grandma Ruthie. She didn't make any effort to hide that. Why pretend now? If I get up in front of a crowd of people and wax poetic about my poignant, life-affirming moments with Grandma, everyone will know I'm lying. So why do it? Because at least you've made the gesture? Jenny, funerals are for the living, Jane, not the dead, she said, right before realizing how inappropriate that statement was and started to giggle. She rolled into all-out guffaws and sat there, braying like a donkey, with tears streaming down her cheeks until I handed her a wet paper towel to wipe down her face. "You done now?" I asked, bemused. She sniffed and nodded.
It was worth a shot. I don't even know why I'm saying this stuff. My therapist says it's a coping mechanism.
I think I can control or fix the situation by making comments like that. Whoa, back up. Did you say therapist?
Yeah, Kent and I actually started a few years ago after he threatened to move out. He said my need to organize was crushing his will to live.
There's been a lot going on with you that I never knew about, huh?
Yep,
she muttered, sipping her coffee.
Is Mama in therapy? Because that would be...
No, I sighed. Too good to be true. Jenny nodded. Jamie came sauntering into the kitchen without a shirt. He was yawning and stretching his arms over his head, his ab muscles flexing for all they were worth. My sister spewed a mouthful of coffee into her cup.
Hey, Jane, we're all out of blood.
In the upset over Grandma Ruthie, I'd completely forgotten about the undead teenager sleeping upstairs. My eyes darted from my flabbergasted sister to my young ward. I decided to play it off as if nothing was wrong. Maybe Jenny would assume that she'd had some sort of nervous breakdown and was hallucinating. I frowned. Yes, some mysterious force swept through the kitchen last night and sucked up all the available sustenance.
Yeah, I got a little hungry.
Jamie gave me his most charming smile, which did less for my motherly instincts than it had the day before.
Oh, hey, Miss Jenny.
I internally snickered at the fact that he called her Miss Jenny. She was just as old and frowish as I was. It was hilarious, right up to the point where the warm, rich scent of Jenny's pumping blood wafted toward him. His nostrils flared, and I could see the muscles in his jaw working as his mouth watered. His eyes darted toward me, panicked. I shook my head. His fangs snicked down with a click, but he slapped a hand over his mouth to cover them. Gabriel? I crossed the kitchen, putting my body between Jamie and my sister. I pressed the bottle of sangre into his hand and, in the best persuasive voice I could muster, said, Jamie, you're going to go upstairs and drink this. You don't want to drink from a human, especially a friend of your family's. You're going to stay up in your room until you hear Jenny's car start. Do you hear me? Jamie seemed to be calculating the distance between us and the table. I could practically see him mapping the acrobatic leaps it would take to get around me and sink his fangs into Jenny's tempting jugular. I curled my fingers around his biceps and pushed him back with all my strength.
Jamie?
I growled.
No.
The tension in his arms was immense, as if he was struggling against me and himself. I saw the tiniest smidge of saliva pooling at the corner of his mouth. I shook his shoulders, and he seemed to snap out of his predatory haze.
But she smells so good,
he cried. Jamie, no.
Please,
he begged. Jamie, as long as you're living under my roof, you're going to follow my rules. And that means not feeding on my family members, I told him.
I hate you,
he yelled, stomping toward the stairs. Gabriel appeared at the kitchen door and grabbed Jamie's arm, leading him from the room as gently as he could. Gabriel was murmuring soothing, mildly threatening words to my grumbling child as he marched him upstairs.
I have turned into my mother, I sighed. Stake me now.
I turned to find my sister staring at me with a horrified expression on her face.
Oh, Jane, you didn't.
What?
You and Jamie? What about Gabriel?
You just saw him. And it's been great. Frankly, I need him around to control Jamie.
Ew! You mean he was with you when it happened?
No. Dick was with me when it happened, I said, my brow scrunched in confusion.
Jenny's jaw dropped, and she let out a little squeak.
What?
Oh, ew! No, I didn't sleep with Jamie. I just turned him.
You turned him? I had to. I don't know what I'm going to do, but I think I have to tell Mama. You're telling on me? Seriously? Are you 5? I didn't have a choice, Jen.
No, I don't mean I have to tell her because you did something wrong, but you know what happens when I'm around her. She senses something's up with weird mothering ESP, corners me, and the next thing you know, I'm spilling my guts. How do you think she found out about that time you and Zeb stole the garden gnome from Mrs. Turnbow?
That was you? Jenny ignored my indignation.
You know I'm going to end up spending a lot of time with her with all this funeral stuff, and she's going to want to latch onto anything non-funeral related to focus on. Damn it, Jane, how could you put me in this position?
You're right. How could I be so thoughtless? I deadpanned. Okay, fine. That was bitchy of me, but still. Can we go back to the sad state of mourning for our grandmother? No way, sister. I've gone years without a legitimate reason to grill you. And yet you did it anyway, I snorted. Right. So now's my chance to put those skills to good use.
Arg.
So, you turned Jamie. How does this work? Did you have to drink all of his blood? Why is he staying with you? How does Gabriel feel about all this? Okay, first, no, I didn't drink all of his blood, because he was hit by a car and was basically bleeding out before I could even get to him. He did drink a little of mine, though. She sighed.
Poor thing.
Yeah,
He was pretty banged up. No, I meant you, she said, grimacing sadly at me. That had to have been scary. I arched an eyebrow and waited for the punchline in which I was a horrible, immoral monster, but Jenny just reached out and squeezed my hands. Thanks, Jen. It was. And now, because I'm the one who turned him, Jamie has to stay with me while he trains to be a grown-up vampire. So, it's a mommy sort of relationship? No, he's my young ward. Like Batman and Robin. Wasn't Batman's relationship with his young ward? Don't start, I grumbled. There was never conclusive proof. And does young Jamie always wander around the house shirtless? She asked, trying to sound nonchalant and failing miserably. Jennifer? What? She asked, the picture of innocence. I'm just curious. Can we go back to rarely speaking? Jenny snorted. Hell no. If I'd known your life was this entertaining, I would have wrestled you into submission years ago. Chapter 5. Feeding schedules are important. While your newborn child shouldn't wake up during the day, he will wake up far less whiny if he feeds just before sunrise. Siring for the Stupid, a beginner's guide to raising newborn vampires. On the night of my grandmother's funeral, two strange things happened. First, someone threw a recently detached deer head onto my front porch. Second, well, I'll get into that in a bit. Fortunately for me, Zeb came by the house during the day to retrieve a blankie left behind by the twins. And he found the deer head flung against my front door like a taxidermist's valentine. He disposed of it and hosed off the porch before fits could start rolling on it. He also called me to try to explain the situation and his theory that the venison delivery was the handiwork of the driver who had hit Jamie, but because daytime leaves vampires less than, well, conscious, I told him, take your muffins to Boston and shut it, Terrence. And then I hung up on him. As the sun set, I snuggled into Gabriel's back and tried to hang on to those last dregs of sleep. Anything to keep me from the evening looming over me. I was supposed to drop by my mother's house in about an hour to visit with the last of the well-wishers. There was a little part of me that felt guilty for not being there for my mom while she buried her own mother, but Mama had assured me that she would be fine as long as I did my time at the visitation. She may have phrased it a different way. Gabriel had been my rock for the last few days, which made up for the fact that he and Jamie had been driving me to empathize with those crazy housewives who flip out and poison their whole church congregations. With three women in the family, it had been like a war zone in my parents' house for 1 week a month, and we still weren't as whiny as those two little wenches. Gabriel complained that Jamie got fits too riled up when they played. One of their more memorable escapades resulted in Fitz dragging Jamie out through his doggy door and knocking off a chunk of the doorframe. Jamie complained that Gabriel watched too much History Channel. Jamie drank all of the faux type O in the house and left his empties in a pyramid formation on the porch. I will not describe Gabriel's reaction when he walked in on Jamie watching Jersey Shore. I couldn't tell whether it was because of the age difference or the generational difference or the fact that Jamie figured out that appearing to flirt with me in any way made Gabriel's fangs grind. Either way, it was annoying as hell. I promised them both that one more fight over whose turn it was to take out the garbage would result in my drinking a dozen of Andrea's espresso concoctions, enabling me to stay up after sunrise and rip their fangs out as they slept. That had managed to keep them quiet for about 24 hours. Drawing on experience with her werewolf relatives, Jolene told me that this was very normal pack behavior, particularly in a pack where the males perceived limited resources. In this pack, the resource was my time and attention. It helped to try to see both points of view. Gabriel had finally gotten me to agree to marriage, to long-term commitment, and our lives had settled down a little, only to have the rug yanked out from under him and a new, disruptive family member added to our household. And poor Jamie. He just recently had normal body parts arrive, and then suddenly he's dead, drinking blood, cut off from his family, and having to entrust his well-being to his former babysitter.
Plus, because the school board considered him dead, he was being homeschooled through the end of his senior year. No baseball, no prom, and the board wouldn't budge on a nighttime graduation ceremony. Overall, we were lucky that he only blew up at us and screamed, "You're not my parents!" once every few hours or so. I'd asked Jolene for advice on how to bring down the tension in the house, but most of her suggestions involved rolled-up newspapers. Rolled-up newspapers are not a universally applicable solution. Jolene's information from her cousin at the DMV was equally unhelpful. There were no plates in that sequence registered to a rusted-out early-model black sedan. There was a very similar plate registered to a pickup truck that had been sent to a car cuber in Monkey's Eyebrow 3 years ago. So, my proactive bent to find the driver who ran Jamie down was at a temporary standstill. At least until I could get my own crime lab and analyze the paint samples scraped down Big Bertha's body. Why now? Why would someone want to hurt me now? It had been months since I'd had trouble with anyone. And the deer head on my porch was a troubling development, especially when combined with the dream about the angry guy on my lawn. I couldn't help but feel that I was missing something. Something important. If I could just connect all of the pieces, I could fix it. Car accident, deer head, Gabriel, angry redneck. And that was the moment when my brain pushed through the final layer of sleepy awareness and came fully awake. Damn it. Rubbing at my eyes, I reached toward the nightstand and grabbed my cell phone. Jenny had been texting me updates throughout the day. Most of it was stuff like, "Aunt Maisie threw herself on top of the casket. Again." Or, "Mama saw what Cuz Jay is wearing and said the F word. Wish I had video cam." Scrolling through her texts, I smiled, although I was sorely disappointed to have missed Mama dropping the F-bomb. Jenny had, however, had the presence of mind to use her phone to snap a photo of Cousin Junie's ensemble. What looked like a low-cut, backless, black top and a leopard-print wrap skirt, better suited to the poolside than the graveside. I burst out laughing, which made Gabriel stir beside me. Shaking my head, I texted back that I was sorry I had missed it and would see her soon. So far, the mourning process seemed to have brought the three of us closer together. Heck, Jenny and I had actually shared a couple of bemused smiles at the visitation when Junie showed up with her signature hot dog bake and insisted that Mama have some to keep up her strength. And Mama was deeply appreciative when Jenny distracted her long enough that I could dispose of the offending mix of hot dogs, crushed Ritz crackers, and cream of mushroom soup. Yak-worthy casseroles aside, the visitation had been surprisingly pleasant. In Half Moon Hollow, the visitations were held on the evening before the burial, giving the community